This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. John Williams here. Pete Zimmerman's our producer. Amy Guth says hi in a little while, and we'll talk with Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno in a little while about the tech sector in this city. What did you say the difference is on gas purchase prices? 93 cents a gallon higher?
Weird. Yeah, 93 cents higher now than 1 year ago.
93 cents a gallon higher than we were 1 year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, you remember, we stopped driving a year ago with the pandemic.
Yeah, I guess so. So demand was down. Supply mm-hmm. was what it was. So the price mm-hmm. dropped, right?
Right.
And also one other number, I didn't ask you to do this off the air. I probably shouldn't bother with you on the air. But so the longboard dude, my mm-hmm. fascination with the NFT,
yep,
the non-fungible token for mm-hmm. the rights to the video of the guy longboarding with the Fleetwood Mac song and the Ocean mm-hmm. Spray cran apple juice in his hand. That went up for auction over the weekend, $500,000 the starting bid. And what happened to that?
It did not sell.
And for some reason, there was a traffic. Do you get the feeling it was that he just wasn't getting his minimum bid, or there was some technical glitch?
I saw that there were 3,500 people had visited the site, and the high bid was 17,000. But his manager says that there was an issue with a file storage issue that would not have allowed the winning bidder to actually be able to see the video. Or own the video?
Yeah.
Something? You know, this is all really far out there.
Nonsense, is that
most
the
of
word?
Us.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
All right. Well, continue to follow that story, even though it apparently is dead and over with.
I really like the guy.
Listen, if you didn't hear our conversation with him, Apodaca, I think, was his last name.
Apodaca.
Apodaca. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
It's
Nathan
Apodaca. It's at WGNRadio.com on the John Williams page. And you will root for him, I think, after you hear our conversation. We talked to him at 11:45 last Friday. Just go to the John Williams page at WGNRadio.com. As we now go to Elise Glink, the real estate and financial wellness expert, owner of Think Glink Media. Hi, Elise. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, John. Nice to be here.
You know, I'm sort of preoccupied with these NFTs, even though I don't even have stocks. I don't have Bitcoin. I don't have Krugerrand. I have nothing exotic. You know, I have money and a mattress is the extent of my, you know, how sophisticated my investments are. And yet Saturday Night Live, I'm told, I got to go back and watch it, did a parody sketch of the people's fascination with these non-fungible tokens, these NFTs. So and maybe that's the day that it's sort of... what's the opposite of jump the shark? It became a real thing when Saturday Night Live is making fun of it too.
It certainly becomes a thing that everybody thinks has become a thing when Saturday Night Live makes fun of it. I will point out that the Federal Reserve Bank, which knows a little bit about trading in Bitcoin and a few other things, has issued a cautionary note. So both sides.
Yeah. I am amazed, though, that, for instance, Tesla is allowing Bitcoin to be the, you can buy a car with a Bitcoin. And so help me, I believe it was the city of Miami gave some of its employees the option of being paid in Bitcoin. So I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon. I guess the question is, how commonly will it be used, right?
Well, when my son's friend got accepted to MIT, and this is like 7 years ago, MIT gave all of the people, 7 or 8 years ago, gave all of the incoming students, incoming freshmen, a free Bitcoin. I wonder how many of them still have it, because that was a pretty nice welcome gift.
That pays for a year's tuition if you've still got the Bitcoin in your pocket, right?
Almost.
Yeah, almost at MIT. bankruptcies, talk to me a little bit about that. Where are we?
Well, it's interesting. So some of the numbers have come out, and over the past year, which obviously most of the year was COVID, bankruptcy filings by consumers under Chapter 7 were down 22%, and individual filings under Chapter 13 fell 46%. So that's good news. For consumers, it went down. But for businesses, not so much. They went up 29%, with more than 7,100 businesses seeking Chapter 11 protection last year.
Can you explain that, why one is up and one is down?
Well, things like stimulus. A lot of it went to help out individual consumers We saw individuals getting extra long amounts of unemployment benefit assistance, PUA, pandemic unemployment assistance for people who wouldn't normally qualify. They were given money. There was extra, remember, the extra $600 to start per week, helping people make more than they were making before. All of that money, it looks like, went to pay down debt and keep people afloat. And that was good news because it kept them out of bankruptcy court.
I want to ask you a little bit about, Lise, about real estate, where the markets, where are the rates. You have some things on the Suez Canal, maybe, and talk to me about stocks in general. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. We'll pick it up here in a minute. Let's continue with more information. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN, and Lise Glink is joining us. We talked about bankruptcies. We talked about virtual currencies and things. Let's talk about something more terra firma, house sales. What's going on there, Lise?
Well, February was really cold. I mean, it's beautiful out today, right? But do you remember in early February, it was, I don't know, minus something?
100, so, yeah, I think it was minus 100.
Yeah, felt that way anyway. Well, people didn't really want to go out shopping for homes, as it turns out. And so existing home sales fell about 6.5% from January, although they're still up over 9% for year over year. And the median existing home price, though, went up 15.8%. From a year ago, February, because I guess people who were buying more expensive homes. But new home sales also paused. They were down 18.2%, still up from a year ago. And the price of a new home has jumped 5.3% from a year ago to almost $350,000. What's important about that, John, is that we're seeing prices tick up for new construction because of the lack of building supplies and particularly the expense of lumber, which has jumped through the roof because of the pandemic. What happened was that the companies that actually take the logs and push them down into, you know, slats for flooring or for siding or to build the actual building, they went on pause for 2 months, and now they're struggling to catch up. And because of that, they've pushed the prices up, and so we're all feeling the pain of that.
Is it unusual to see February's home sales numbers lower than January's?
It is. So we are, as everybody who has listened to me for years knows, the official date for the spring market actually starts January 2nd or 3rd. You know, it's kind of right after you get over your hangover, you know, from New Year's Eve. But and so we were doing great in January, but because of the cold, it was so cold over so much of the country, things really slowed down. But they're expecting March to pick up again.
Can you update us on forbearance with mortgages?
Yeah, actually, Black Knight came out with some new numbers, and this is actually good news. The loans in forbearance fell at its fastest pace in months, meaning that people are actually getting back and making those payments. So that's actually good. However, the delinquency rate is ticking up, and that's not so good. So what it means is that people are starting to slow down on their payments, but people who were in forbearance have actually gotten through forbearance. So it's kind of a good news, bad news situation. I would expect those numbers for active forbearance to continue to decline and the national delinquency rate to drop again because we've now had this next round of stimulus payments go through.
Elise, is this true that forbearance like you have for your student loan is the same as for your mortgage? If you do pay, you pay on the principal, which is nice. If you enjoy forbearance, then you still have to pay, but you don't have to pay now. It is delayed.
So it's a little bit different from student loans, right? So student loans, no payment, everything. What it did is it dropped to 0%, the interest, and they just paused all the payments. With your forbearance for your mortgage, they basically put it on pause, but they didn't change your interest rate. So what happened there is they just basically said you don't have to pay for 6 months, and if you need another 6 months, you can have another 6 months. Coming out of forbearance, though, is actually really good news because according to Black Knight, the number of mortgages receiving protection declined by about 5% last month. That means that people are able to convert their forbearance into either they catch up on all the payments right at once, or they come up with a new payment schedule and they pick up where they left off, Or three, they've converted those loans to make them more affordable to whatever your income is now. If your income's gone down permanently, they'll readjust those mortgages. But getting you out of that means you're on stronger footing. And I think that that's good news for everybody.
So it is not the case that, say, you took 6 months or a year of forbearance, you don't owe 12 months of mortgage payments that next day.
You do not. It is one option. So, for example, if you got, let's say you won the lottery and you have a windfall and you want to pay that off in one fell swoop, you can. But mostly what people are doing is they're just adding that missing year onto the end of their payments. So now if you had 22 years left on your mortgage, you would have 23 years left. But you pick up the payments where they are. But we're also seeing a lot of people who are just making less money than they were.
Yeah.
And so those people are getting a new mortgage.
And with the rates the way they are you following the rates? Are they, they've been trending up, but it's nothing seismic, right?
It's about a half a point higher than it was in January. So for some people, that's going to be expensive. But overall, we're still talking about interest rates that are maybe 3.25%, very close to historic lows. This is, you know, really still almost like free money.
Can you talk to us about the stock market a little bit, Elise?
Yeah, it started pretty down today, but of course we had all-time highs last week, so you would expect a little bit of pullback. There's some problems with some losses of U.S. hedge funds and banks. Credit Suisse had a little bit of an issue. There's some other stuff going on with bank shares, but to me, the biggest thing that goes on with the stock market now is all to do with COVID. So when the CDC chief warns that we're heading for, quote unquote, impending doom, which is what she said this morning, to me, that's a worrying sign for the markets. In some cases, they'll be happy because it means that the Fed is going to keep pumping money into the economy. So that's a good thing. And I think that's probably why the Dow turned upward, when it did. It was right around when she made that comment. On the other hand, it's not so great for the tech stocks, and so they're down. So it's interesting how the stock market is responding so quickly to things relating to the pandemic.
Relative to Friday's close, though, it's not off that much. I mean, the NASDAQ isn't off 400. It's off 30, 40 points last time I saw the ticker on that.
No, that's correct. It was down further earlier today. It was down when I last saw it, maybe 150 points, but it's fought its way all the way back. And as you know, I think that we all spend like a little too much time looking minute to minute at what's going on in the stock market.
Yes,
overall, the market is up for the year. It's really strong. And everybody that I can see is urging people to invest for the long haul and to put more money in there.
Any individual equities kind of caught your fancy right now?
Well, I'm staying away from GameStop. I don't know about you.
But, that story isn't over because I forget what the number was that Steve had last week, but we were just chatting a little bit about it. The interest in that is not gone. You will see, I think it was a 40% swing in a couple of days last week. That story is not over yet, is it?
It's not over. I think one of the more interesting stories this week is that WeWork, remember WeWork?
Mm-hmm.
WeWork is actually going public with one of these new SPACs. And what they're doing, I think it's good news, actually. They're treating them less like a tech company, which I'm not sure they ever were. And they're treating them like a real estate company, which is what they are, right? So they lease large buildings and then they rent it out to small tenants. Of course, nobody really wants to do that right now, but they'll come back. And so they're going public and they're going to raise some money that way. And that would be a very interesting, that's an interesting company to watch. Note, I'm not suggesting you go out and invest in it.
Well, if WeWork was a good, I understand, I take your point, but if WeWork was a good idea before the pandemic, how is it not a good idea during or after the pandemic?
Because people don't want to be in, if you've ever been in one of these WeWork offices, and I've been in many all over the country, it's tightly packed. The hallways are teeny tiny. The offices are tiny. They don't clean the conference rooms after everybody's been in there. And you're in and out in shared spaces, sharing everything. That was the whole point of it. It's all glass walls and, areas where you can go and sit and have a cup of coffee with people and supposedly bump into entrepreneurs and great things will happen. Well, that's fine. But when you don't want to breathe everybody else's air, I'm not sure it's such a great idea anymore.
Well, then maybe I'm imagining a different space. I imagined it as sort of open, broad, vast spaces where you would go and work. You wouldn't have to pay rent at an expensive office or hire a staff or be part of a staff. You could go work independently, have some of that collaborative cost sharing and also mental sharing, but that it was more open. I didn't even think about it the way you described it. Does the place I'm thinking about exist?
Maybe. I haven't been in one like that for a long time.
No kidding. Well, because why? They're maximizing that. So that footprint. So if they paid for all that real estate, they're not going to make it this breezy TV set that I'm describing. They're cramming you in there is more what you're telling me.
It is. It's a lot of little teeny tiny offices. And I mean tiny, 200 square feet or even smaller than that, where you're in there and you need privacy, right, to conduct your business. There are some shared, more open spaces that you can go to. But the WeWorks that I've been in, the whole point is you can lease these teeny tiny offices, have a place to go. It's kind of, though, what people are doing now. They're just running their businesses from home.
Mm. Elise Glink, visit thinkglink.com. Elise is also the author of a book, 100 Questions Every First-Time Homebuyer Should Ask. Maybe second-time homebuyers, too. Visit thinkglink.com. Thanks for your help, Elise. We'll visit next Monday.
That sounds great, John.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. Pete Zimmerman produces the show. I'm John Williams. Jim Dahlke is the senior editor at ChicagoInno.com. Hi, Jim. How are you today?
Hey, John. Good. Doing great. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're able to join us. I've heard of the phrase glamping recently, and I'm trying to recall where else I heard it besides on your website. Talk to me about what glamping is and why it's in the news.
Yeah, so glamping, think of it as a bit more of an elevated camping experience. If you enjoy the outdoors, you like to get out with nature, but don't necessarily love sleeping on the ground in a sleeping bag, worrying about assembling the poles on your tent and spending hours kind of putting together a little campsite together. Glamping is sort of a term that encompasses a more elevated, a more luxurious camping experience. And there's a startup in Chicago called Off Map, which is bringing glamping to a little corner of Southwest Michigan. So this startup has purchased about 75 acres of land near South Haven, where starting this July, it will begin housing guests at its multi-tent facility here in Southwest Michigan. And so really what their differentiator is they've created these fully furnished tents that are built on these little wood docks, essentially, that are off the ground. They're elevated. Each has a full bed, so it's got a mattress, linens, decor, a wood-burning stove. You're not going to have any sort of tent assembly here. This is a turnkey experience. OffMap is a really interesting company, joining several businesses, actually, that are starting to do this. I think there are a lot of upstarts that are seeing that, hey, the millennial camper enjoys an outdoor experience, but all the hassle of putting together a campsite. So starting in July, OffMap will be hosting folks at its Southwest Michigan facility.
What's it cost for a night, do you know?
So $200 for a tent starting out. So that's going to be their kind of initial price point. They really see a big opportunity here for groups down the line. So think, putting an entire wedding party here for a weekend, corporate retreats. So in the middle of the week, getting a company out there, doing some offsite getaways. They were thinking about this business long before COVID, but certainly now, in the middle of COVID and thinking about vacationing and work retreats post-COVID, real big opportunity here, I think, especially as people are looking to get away, but still kind of keep a socially distanced environment. Mm-hmm. An option like this is really interesting.
Well, maybe it's not the cost savings as much as it is the experience and the safety factor, as you mentioned, but $200 a night in Southwest Michigan, you could stay at a decent resort for that amount of money. Would it be $200 every night?
Well, so when you think about it that way, if you were going to camp for the very first time, you got to go out and buy a tent.
Yeah.
You got to go out and buy a sleeping bag, all the equipment, right? So when you think about it that way, that you're saving a bit of money up front. But from that point on, you're looking at about a hotel stay, essentially.
Escape to the Chateau. That's the show Brenda and I watch. It's about a couple from England. They buy a castle in France, and then they have these grounds and people that don't stay in their castellet, their chateau. They then set up these geodesic domes on wood pallets with wood-burning stoves and sleeping bags and beds, actually. And they let people camp out on the grounds. Sounds kind of like what you have in mind there, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's a very similar concept. And, this actually is a business led by the founder of Rent Like a Champion, who another Chicago startup launched several years ago. They were on Shark Tank. That business was all about kind of like creating an Airbnb-like business, but dedicated specifically for college towns during big football weekends. So I think South Bend, Indiana, for example, everybody's coming into town watching the football game at Notre Dame. They're able to kind of create a platform that helps folks rent out their houses for people who are coming into town. After he sold his piece of that business, he's now onto a new company. So really interesting kind of serial entrepreneurship story here, too.
You all wrote about a biotech startup in Chicago that treats people with Tourette syndrome. Is that right?
That's right. So Immolex Biosciences just last week raised $35 million. Really interesting kind of up-and-coming biotech startup in the city. They're developing a drug therapy for pediatric Tourette syndrome and stuttering. They're a really interesting company. They're currently in some phase two clinical trials. They say there are 70 million people worldwide who suffer from stuttering, and there's actually no current FDA-approved treatment. So their goal is really to kind of change that. And, a really interesting example of a Chicago biotech startup that's really growing in the city. City business leaders really believe that Chicago is kind of poised to be, one of the next breakout life sciences cities. And we have about 700,000 plus square feet of lab space that's actually being built out in and around the downtown area right now. A lot of buy-in from business leaders and government leaders who really kind of think that Chicago is actually prepared for a biotech boost. The city still sort of nowhere near what's happening in the Bay Area or Boston, of course, but definitely some interesting momentum happening in Chicago when it comes to biotech and some startups to watch for sure.
I saw your story about this. So they do have phase two pharmacological treatment for it. Do you know what the status of that is, the efficacy of it is?
Yeah, so, they're going to work through getting through the whole FDA process right now. So right now they're still doing the phase two trials. And then they will evaluate for the safety of it in the coming months. So they're going to use this funding to continue through the FDA trials. And so we'll be curious to see how they continue to grow. The funding comes from some interesting sources. One of the backers was Valor Equity Partners here in Chicago. That fund is well known for investing in previous startups like Tesla and SpaceX. So definitely interesting to see who's backing the business as well.
Yeah, no kidding. I know some people with Tourette's, and I think plenty of people would be willing to participate in the trials because, there's it can be very frustrating for families, as I'm sure you well know. I'm looking for the name of the company again. What was that, Paragon?
Immolex Biosciences. Yeah, Paragon is one of the funders of them, but E-M-A-L-E-X.
Immolex.
It's the company.
Got it. Give me one more story. You want to talk about Four Kites, maybe? What's happening with this firm?
Yeah, Four Kites, a Chicago logistics tech startup, just raised $100 million, actually, in new funding last week. Chicago is really kind of cementing itself as this powerhouse for logistics tech startups. The city now actually has two such companies that have raised a total of $200 million in total funding to date. Four Kites launched back in 2014. They make software that helps companies predict when shipments are going to arrive at scheduled stops. Can also do things like monitor load temperature and analyze different supply chain data. They work with a ton of well-known brands like Walmart and Coca-Cola and AB InBev, PetSmart. And they have really, really caught fire lately and are one of the fast-growing logistics tech startups. Project 44 is another one in Chicago who's raised a bunch of funding, $240 million today. They do some similar logistics tech stuff. So Chicago really kind of becoming a hotspot for logistics startups.
Boy, it's good that you guys follow these sectors because they're out there. We don't think about them. They're not Caterpillar. They're not Boeing. They're not maybe super sexy. Well, actually, maybe they are super sexy. Caterpillar and Boeing maybe aren't, but it's fascinating, Jim. We'll visit again next week.
Sounds good, John.
Jim Dahlke is the senior editor at ChicagoInno.com. Okay, Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A Swiss billionaire and environmental activist has joined a bid to buy Tribune Publishing, including the Chicago Tribune. Hans Jörg Wies, who lives in Wyoming, has given a portion of his fortune away to preserve wildlife habitats and says he's motivated to join the bidding because he believes in the need for a robust press. He's teamed up with Maryland hotel magnate Stuart W. Bainum Jr. in an effort to outbid hedge fund Alden Global Capital. Tribune's board of directors had already recommended that shareholders accept the takeover bid from Alden. Southwest Airlines has announced 100 firm orders for Boeing 737 MAX jets while taking an option on 155 more planes. Southwest had been considering alternatives to the MAX during the time the jet was grounded by two fatal crashes. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Agribiz, here's Steve Alexander.
Hey, Mr. Williams, let's talk about farms. Usually, Illinois farms are measured in acres, sometimes in the thousands of acres for the big ones, but the average is 375. There is a farm, though, in Chicago's Inglewood neighborhood that is measured in city blocks.
Currently, we're growing on three lots located on the south side in Inglewood, 5814 South Wood Street.
That's Laquandra Fair, the community engagement coordinator for Growing Home, which has been growing food for the community's benefit in Inglewood for over a decade.
We are the first USDA certified organic farm within the city limits.
She says Growing Home sells the food it raises at a discount to residents in Inglewood, parts of which are in a food desert, meaning affordable and nutritious food is hard to find. Growing Home has stepped up to fill that void, literally filling it in one location.
One of our locations is actually where an old grocery store used to exist.
Growing Home also runs a farmer's market.
We actually will be starting our farmer's market in April, and it will be at our new site on Honorary Street, 5830 South Honorary.
And Growing Home raises a lot of food.
We actually can grow over 30,000 pounds, and we're pushing for more with the opening of our new lot. So that will be an extra 8,000 pounds as well for Inglewood.
And with hoop houses, food is grown roughly 10 months out of the year, and a lot of it is given away.
We have already donated 31,650 pounds of food. With that being 1,750 boxes as of last week.
And Growing Home does more than grow food for Inglewood. It grows people, too, in a way, with a job training program for people who have struggled with employment.
And we use agriculture as a driving vehicle to teach adults transferable skills so that they're ready to reenter the workforce.
You can check it out at growinghomeinc.org. They're always looking for volunteers and donations. growinghomeinc.org. Today is National Lemon Chiffon Cake Day. That's your money on 720 WGN.
Okay, let's continue on the Wintrust Business Lunch with a different Amy. This is Amy Guth. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how's it going today?
Really good. I see a little symmetry here. We were talking a little while ago about a firm in Chicago that does glamping, sort of high-end camping, and you are also looking at Airbnbs and VRBOs, which I think are hot properties or ideas right now, maybe for some of the same reasons. You don't want to go to a traditional hotel, etc.
Yeah, that's right. There's definitely a travel theme to a lot of what we're looking at today in the business reporting realm. And the CEO of Verbo was speaking at a conference, and he was talking about, and then later said the same thing to CNN, excuse me, essentially saying, we're really seeing a huge surge. He said, we've had a phenomenal recovery. And he was describing a couple of new things, newish. One of them is that the kind of the longer definition of a vacation, more people are like, well, I'm working from home, so I could kind of do this from anywhere. So it's not, I'm just going to rent a beach house for a week. I might do it for a month, things like that. But he's really talking about seeing things in really high gear. We're seeing the markets react to that, both for Airbnb and Vrbo. And he was hopeful. What he told CNN is that he was hopeful this would kind of lift everybody else in the travel industry. Now, I think the counter to that, right, is that we saw European airlines earlier and late last week saying we're very concerned. We saw an airline lobby group really pushing for this kind of vaccine passport, because what some European airlines are saying is we really count on that summer part, just as U.S. airlines do, really count on those summer vacation rentals or tickets, rather, and all that vacation travel. And they're not seeing it yet. So Ryanair, for example, said they've kind of pushed back their plans for the summer to start July 1st instead of May 1st, but emphasized that Q3 revenue is absolutely key to staying afloat. So they're kind of gloom and doom when we're looking at European air carriers. They were kind of like, without some help, without something turning a corner, we're going to see this just rash of bankruptcies and airlines folding. Meanwhile, here we have, you know, Southwest just placed this huge Boeing order, one of the biggest since it, you know, the safety grounding was lifted from Boeing. Southwest is a huge Boeing customer. And we have, you know, Vrbo and Airbnb talking about how they're just kind of maxed out with bookings. So it's kind of two very different stories of what's happening in Europe and what's happening here. That said, they're about, you know, 6 to 8 weeks ahead in the pandemic cycle than we are here. So we saw the head of the CDC saying, hey, we're seeing case numbers go up despite mm-hmm. vaccine efforts. I'm still urging caution and really kind of speaking off, you know, she even said, I'm going off script here to talk about what's going on. So I think there's just kind of a lot of wait and see. Even the European air carriers were saying, hey, the ground beneath us shifts day by day. So still a lot of questions for the travel industry and what's ahead for them.
Catch us up on what Bed Bath & Beyond is doing.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a really interesting thing to watch. So Bed Bath & Beyond has been pretty aggressive with their staffing. They, the CEO, Mark Tritton, he used to be the chief of merchandising at Target. So he was a big get. But now Bed Bath & Beyond has just poached two pretty high-profile executives. Jill Pavlovich, she used to be the head of exclusive brands and merchandising for Wayfair. And Jay Griffin, he was the general manager for sports and fitness at Walmart. They have both been poached, and they're doing this with kind of the aim of helping grow the online presence of Bed Bath & Beyond. Over the last year plus, we've talked about how many of the Bed Bath & Beyond stores have closed, have changed business models, have kind of pared things down. And so it looks like they're really taking their, you know, this plan to move into the online space in a really interesting way. So I think this is going to be fascinating to watch and see what they do with those three, you know, that came from these big retail names at the wheel at Bed Bath & Beyond, to see what it grows in terms of their online strategy.
Stuff is moving through the Suez Canal now, huh?
I know. I think that has been so interesting to watch that story. And it's just been fascinating to see what this one boat did in terms of just blocking trade and, you know, doing that kind of thing, and what it costs per day. I thought that was so very, very interesting. But now that it's moving, you know, we shall see. But when we start looking at, you know, some of the reporting, Bloomberg had a number that was almost 10 million a day or 10 billion a day in goods. I think it's going to be very important to keep an eye on specifically the auto industry. We already saw some shortages that have been impacting the auto industry, but other goods and, of course, fuel. I think that's going to be an interesting and important thing to keep an eye on, just because even though that boat is moving now, and we're all glad about that, but nonetheless, just that delay and all the backlog of ships behind it, no doubt we will see that. We will see that hit our wallets in one way or another.
Add the Evergreen to the Exxon Valdez for two famous commercial, if you will, ships whose names may live in some infamy. Amy Guth reporting on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Talk to you later, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.